Thank you, Joe. My name is Julian Bosserman, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Julian.
I sure am anxious to hear what I got to say after that. I am glad to be here. First, I'd like to thank the ones that made the mistake of inviting me. I was here once before, and I know you must have enjoyed it because you invited me back. That was 15 years ago. But I am glad to be here. And right now, I'd like to say anything I say is my own opinion. And I'd also like to reserve the right to change my mind right after the meeting if you want to argue about it. And those of you that are my friends and still came to this meeting, and it gets too hot and you get through before I do, feel free to walk out. Because I've had people walk off and leave me standing talking to myself many times. In fact, to talk to these people in the dark is a little strange for me anyway. I never ask anymore if you can hear me in the back, because the last time I did, a fellow said no, and the guy down front says I can hear him. I'll gladly change seats with you. You can already tell I'm a Virginia hillbilly. I drink whiskey back. And a lot of the people when I talk to that know you and know your story, and I can't change mine unless I get drunk, and I don't want to do that. You'll hear the same thing you've heard before. I have often said I drink a long time. You can tell by looking at me, I've been somewhere a long time. I did dress up tonight, put on a tie, and this is supposed to be pretty. I don't know what you think of it. I'm not going to tell you what I do. I started drinking way back in the bloomer days. And a lot of you older people know what bloomers are. And back in the mountains where I came from, they made bloomers out of flour sacks. I don't know if I was an alcoholic at this time or not, but I began to have trouble about the time self-rising flour come out. And this is no story. This is the truth. Many of the things that happened to me, a lot of people think that I'm telling them a story. I mean, it really didn't. But I came from way back in the woods where we had a one-room school, and I did go a little while. And actually, those of you that never went to a school back in the mountains, we were really further advanced than many of you. Many of the leading colleges are today. By that, I mean we had, back in them days, they taught sex, only we called it recess. I mean, they're still arguing about this in some places. But I say, back where I came from, you went to school until you got big enough to plow. You didn't graduate. In fact, you don't know for sure whether the teacher graduated or not. But I was going to school, and I was getting up pretty good age, and we had a pretty good-looking school teacher. And I was looking over like some of the new members look over this program and say it's fine for the other people, but not for them. And one evening, coming home from school, we were playing ball, and the ball came down. She had her arms around me, and I turned around, and she kissed me, and I jumped every fence from there home. I was big enough to plow. So my story is like yet unlike many you will hear. By that I mean I had no... Many people start out to drinking when they went to college. I had no trouble in college. I didn't go. Or I had no trouble in high school either. I think I was well up around the third grade before I noticed anything about alcohol. Now, this is really not too funny because it takes a hell of a long time to get to the third grade when you got to take off and plow. And I'd like to explain now that if I should talk over the head of any of you people here tonight, you'll realize I got my education a little higher up on the mountain than most of them. But basically, alcohol is a problem. We're not here, and I am certainly not here as a speaker. I just came down here to talk to you, one drunk to another. And I think you'll know what I mean when I tell you that I know I see a lot of people here from the Carolinas and Tennessee and Georgia. You will know what I mean when I tell you that I drank the mountain corn liquor. It was made back in those days, and when I was a kid, we'd have company at home, and as soon as they would shake hands, my grandfather would say, "Come on, let's go to the barn and look at the wheat, and you know all wheat looks alike." I went with them. And they'd pass around the jug, and about the time it got to the third one, the first one would say, "It's pretty good, wasn't it?" I mean, you couldn't talk for a long time after that stuff. And it was pretty good. I liked it. A couple drinks of that stuff, and I could ride the wildest horse or wasn't afraid of the meanest bull on the place. I mean, it did something for me. And we used it for everything. Rheumatism, fallen arches, blast stumps, or even for falling hair. You can see that it don't do much for your hair. But it sure does help rheumatism, I mean. And a lot of those old people back there used it, and I thought it was a thing to do, and I just did like they did. Then when I got big enough to swim the river, I left home. I live right on the Shenandoah River, and I hauled off and went to the big city of Washington to make my fortune. And for a drunk, this was a fine place. This was back in the days before they had legal liquor. And when I went to Washington and got some of that bottle and bond liquor, I really did like it. I knew the guy that bottled it and bonded it. I mean, I helped him, in fact. And I started drinking down on Skid Row in Washington, down on 9th Street. And you might say, for a drunk log story, I worked backwards from nothing for some 20 years. Now, that isn't easy, but you can do it. I'd get drunk and go somewhere. Again, unlike many people, when I didn't send home for any money. I had as much money with me as they had at home. I really did. My people were so poor, we even didn't even notice they had a depression. That's the truth. I mean, I live now in a house 200 years old. And the old house that I lived in had never been painted. My people was too poor to paint and too proud to whitewash. I mean, it was one of those situations. And I say, I'd get drunk and go somewhere. And where I sobered up, that's where I lived. And it's strange as it might seem that we are all here together now, I'd get with a bunch just like you people, whatever town I'd hit. I'd hitchhike both directions on the same road. Well, half the time I didn't know where it came from. It didn't make any difference where I'm going. I mean, this is a way to travel, really, if you want to see something. Follow the day, I woke up in some of the strangest places. And at those times that I woke up, that I didn't know what town I was in. But I believe if I was to go back to drinking, this is the way I would now live. Because you can drink better on Skid Row than anywhere else I know of. I mean by that, for an alcoholic to drink and act decent, you just can't hardly do it. I tried it. And today's times, I wouldn't have to worry about the only thing I had to worry about then, and I had a phobia about panhandling barefooted. No kidding. You get up and you wake up and you didn't have any shoes, you'd have to look for some until I just hated to panhandle barefooted. It just didn't look nice. Today, I think it would be all right. I mean, and I had long hair before it was very popular. So I say, about the same things happened to me that happened to everybody else. I roamed around. I didn't know where I was going, what I was doing. I was like an old uncle of mine that got drunk. He come in one morning dragging a rope and said he didn't know whether he'd found a rope or lost a mule. And that's the way I was living. But I was having that so-called alcoholic fun. I really was. I thought for a while that I drank, that I had a weak stomach, and all until I went down that river, that Potomac River from Washington, on a boat one time. And we couldn't get in when we got to Norfolk, and we was laying outside there, and it was rough. And, of course, all of them was hanging over the rail, and I didn't notice it was rough. I was hanging over the rail, as usual, in the morning. And one old lady come by, she says, "What's the matter, son? You got a weak stomach?" I said, "No, I'm throwing it just as far as any of them." And I was. I didn't know what she meant, of course. And to say that I had trouble with alcohol was putting it mild. I got some notes here. Just strange, I can't read these things, but I put them down sometime. My wife says you sometime don't read them. Anyway, what do you care them for? I got my wife with me. I'm glad she stayed with me. Taking her to one of these things kind of like going hunting with the game warden, but she's here. She said she heard about me before I ever met her, really. I went to a dance up in her part of the country one night, and I say then I was drinking normally. I mean, it was nothing unusual to get drunk, and I was up in her part of the country one time, and I was doing the normal things that an alcoholic does. And on the way home, I had an automobile, and the normal thing was to run wide open. And I was coming down the road with this old automobile, doing all she would do, figuring that it would soon break down anyway. I wanted to get all the distance I could out of it. Normal thinking, you know. And I saw a bridge coming up the road, and I pulled over to let it go by. I really did. I mean, well, I thought for a drunk, this was pretty smart. Most of them would have run into it. But I did things like that, and I did it normally. I mean, thinking I was doing all right. I've often told people, and it's the truth, I used to save up liquor, and I never did save up enough to get all the way through a drunk. But I'd save it up to go hunting in the fall of the year. I'd go back home. I was a great deer hunter. I've been all my life. Never shot a deer in my life. You'd think as much as I laid out in the woods drunk, one would have laid down behind me and died. But I... I would go to the mountains and go hunting. And I found out after I got in AA that I was finally getting what I was hunting. Because I was hunting still, and I'd usually find one. I remember an old boy I found one morning about 9 o'clock. I was getting pretty sick. And he was running off a little batch, and I got there and took a drink, and it was awful stuff. And I was awful sick, and it didn't stay where I wanted it. And I'd sit down on the log and was gagging and holding my eyes, and Sit there a few minutes, and he says, now try it. It's got some age on it. And believe it, must have improved. I stayed with him all day. I mean, this is the way I'd go hunting. This is the way I did everything. And I thought I was doing normal. And since I've got sober, I watch some of these normal people now. They don't act too smart either. By that I mean that I notice strange things amongst people. Such as, and you have it happen at home, somebody run around the house looking for the car keys and say it'd be the last place I look. It'd be smart to go looking for them after you found them, wouldn't it? I mean, but a lot of people do this. Coming down here on the highway. Pull in a place to get gas. Go in. A lot of times, cash register's open, safe setting wide open. Toilet locked. You check on this. This is the truth. You try it. If you don't know what I mean, you pull into one in a big hurry and run around the toilet before you get the key. You know. But these are normal people. Like I said, and I often say and still do, if I get sick, I most surely want a doctor. If there's any here, all due respect to them, but they never seem to do me much good. And I tell them one of the reasons I guess I didn't, I was... lived in a house where a bunch of students lived. One of my old doctors up home treated the fellow for 2 years for yellow jaundice before he found out he was a Chinaman, I mean. Things like that kind of discourage you when you get sick. But I said, these things happened to me. So I figured that I was kind of a loner, and I had to look out for myself, and I didn't care about anybody else. What they did, how they got along, or what they did. I didn't care any more than I did about, like, the old boy up home that come by my brother's house one day, and he upset a load of hay right out in front of the house. My brother went out and said, come on in. He said, what do you mean? He said, well, I got to go. The old man will raise hell. He said, no. I said, come on in and eat dinner. He went in to eat, sit there. Well, he says, I better go. He said, the old man's going to raise hell. He smoked a while and said, I got to go. He said, the old man really. He says, where is that this old man's going to do? I said, he's out there under that load of hay. I mean, and that's the way I lived. I don't know how to tell a new person, and these are the people I like to talk to, the new people in AA. The old timers can tell them what I said was wrong, and then they'll get two meetings out of this. Like this meeting they're going to have tomorrow at 10 o'clock, that's for you chairmen and speakers to learn to do, not to do what I do tonight. I guess that's what it's for. They never said nothing to me. So if you're new and wondering about being an alcoholic, one of my hang-ups when I first came in was why I was an alcoholic if I wasn't drinking. I mean, I had the measles and got over them. They didn't call me measly. I mean, but I remained an alcoholic after I quit drinking. But I heard a man tell a talk one night. And he was a very smart man. He was a doctor. And he told what an alcoholic was, and he said an alcoholic given a pint of liquor and a non-alcoholic given a pint of liquor tapped the spine in 12 hours. The non-alcoholic threw some filter in the system, threw it off, and the alcoholic retained it in the system. And he said once this filter was torn down, could never be rebuilt. And he talked about this filter for some 45 minutes, and explained it in medical terms that I didn't understand and doubted if he did. But he was a real smart fellow that night. He got drunk later on, but he knew what he was talking about that night. And after he got through, if you're new, I was looking for the reason why I was an alcoholic. But when he got through, I came to the brilliant conclusion that I had busted my strainer and there wasn't a damn thing I could do about it. Now, if you can keep it that simple, you won't have any more trouble. I happened to be at the meeting, the last meeting that Dr. Bob spoke, and he said, please keep it simple. This is a program of love and service. Don't louse it up. Keep it simple. Now, if you keep it much simpler than I am, you might not get it at all, but I mean, the thing to do is to keep it simple. And work it your way. And your way is possibly the way your sponsor tells you. Many people today don't have a sponsor. I'm a great believer in sponsors, and I have learned to believe that what Dave C. says is the truth. If you got one you like, you better change. Because if everything he's telling you you like is something wrong. I think that we need more than one sponsor. I have more than one. Everybody's my sponsor. I really... This stuff about loving people, I don't love everybody. I'm supposed to be honest about it. And to you, I will say, I like all of you, and I love some of you. And I don't even say my heart goes out to you people. I get a funny feeling in my stomach around the people I like. And it don't sound nice, say my guts go out to you. I mean, I don't feel any different in my heart after I see you, but I feel a little something funny in my stomach. So that's where I feel my connection with an alcoholic. I have an unknown, built-in relationship with an alcoholic. And you non-alcoholics, too, that have stayed with the alcoholics. I say my wife's with me. She didn't leave me during my drinking. She didn't have anywhere to go. I mean... And I appreciate all of the wives and the mothers and husbands and all that have stayed with their spouse while they were drinking. Yet at the same time, to a lot of you wives, I'd like for you to know you caused us a hell of a lot of trouble, too, while we were drinking. I mean, my wife says when I was getting better, after about 3 days of no drinking, I'd begin to think I was going to live. I'd come out and lay down in the living room. And she would come in and start that damn carpet sweeper. Now, this is being cruel to a man laying at death's door. I mean, and incidentally, if there's any psychiatrist here tonight, I got 9 grandchildren. 6 of them's afraid of a carpet sweeper. Any of you alcoholic counselors might use that, too. I mean, I don't know. I've said often I'd go home, get sober. When my wristwatch got heavy, I knew it was time that I was doing something. And I'd go home to get sober. I'd go back in the mountains where I should have stayed in the first place. I had absolutely no business leaving there. After some 10 or 15 years of this drinking and all, I could see I wasn't going to amount to anything. So I'd go back home to sober up and talk about getting sick. Some of you people that arrive at AA now don't really know what getting sick is or what sobering up is. We have some very sophisticated and wonderful hospitals and nice places to get sober now. I got a nice place up there on the farm that you can get sober. Lay down there on a rock and drink spring water for 3 days, and that'll do it. You can get off of that rock in 3 to 5 days and you'll be just as sober as you can get in the hospital. And your sobriety might last just about as long. Because that's a hard way to get sober. I'd go home and say, and I was so sick I couldn't stand it. My mother used to think if you'd come to the table you was doing good, and if I got to the table I was doing good. But I was afraid not to eat, afraid she'd think I was going to die and I'd eat. Of course, I'd eat something and throw up easy. I knew what was going to happen, and I'd run as soon as I would eat my dinner, and I'd run out. And after I was home about 3 days, when I'd come out the house, the chickens would follow me. Now, this sounds funny, but this was embarrassing, I mean. So if there's any of you new people that think you're drinking a little and getting by with it, don't kid yourself. Back in the country, back there in the woods, even the hogs and chickens knew when you was drunk. In order to get to be an old hog or an old chicken, you had to know, because I had a brother who would sell anything he could catch when he got drunk. He'd catch a hog and butcher and take it to town and sell lamb chops, pork chops, anything you wanted off the same hog. This is the way alcoholics operate. I don't know what happened. I put up with this as long as I could, and other people had begun not to put up with me. I was drinking and sobering up there that way until I didn't have money enough to go to one of these places to get sober. I mean, it was a matter if I had 75 cents left, I knew what would cure me. But I got so I couldn't drink, and I couldn't sober up, and I couldn't walk, and I couldn't crawl. I mean, my wife said I didn't stagger around much drunk, and I didn't realize until it had closed meeting not long ago that I really didn't stagger around drunk, but I'd done a lot of drinking laying down. You can't stagger much laying down. But I would try to walk off these drunks, and you have done the same thing possibly, and I got to the point I couldn't walk by a rock without looking under it. And it's awful rocky up there where I live. And I noticed other people wasn't doing this. I mean, it got to worrying me. And when it got to worrying me, I thought I'd better do something. And like Joe said, I went to the doctor, and he told me that he didn't know what it was, but there was a bunch of drunks getting together, and they were doing something, and I better get down there and do it. So I went to this alcoholic friend of mine, and I called to him. He wanted to come out the house. I didn't want him to come to the house, because if he was talking the way I didn't want to hear, he might not leave, and if I went to his house, I could leave. And he was a full-blooded Scotchman, and he talks just like he did when he come out from under the bridge in Thames River in Scotland, and I talked mountain talk, and we didn't understand one another. And I listened till nearly midnight, and I had to go back to find out what it was all about. And I didn't grasp a whole lot real quick. But I did get the idea that you're supposed to take it easy. And I was pretty adept at that. I learned how to take it easy. I got into this program and I practiced taking it easy. A lot of the things that I did, I don't advise you doing. A lot of women have told me, wish you'd have kept your mouth shut. My husband was no good to start with, and after listening to you, he got worse. But taking it easy to me meant not working. And I'm a little allergic to work, still am. I don't even like to work the program. I like to let it. And that's what you got to do. You'd work at it too hard, so I have to let it. But after I got into AA, I heard a fellow say when I come in the lobby up here, he said, there he is making arrangements. I made some arrangements, and I had a few fellows working for me. And this is possibly one of the reasons I learned how to take it easy. I had some men working, and one morning before breakfast, one of the painters called up and said he'd be late. When a painter's late, he's drunk. You don't have to worry about that. And before breakfast was over, two of them called up, and the streetcar with one was on had run into the bus, the other one was on. A very likely drunk story. They didn't know that I knew what they were doing. And I told my wife, looked like it's going to be a nice day, and I went over on a job where I had a plaster working. And the man was mad because he'd fixed his ceiling wrong or hadn't fixed it right, and he got mad, and I left there and went over on another job to collect some money. The man wouldn't pay me, said I'd charged him too much, and the wheel was turning. If I'd have got the money, I might have got drunk. I came back by another job in this, to you non-alcoholics. When I got on this job, I was some 8-10 miles from home. My wife called me. That built-in radar that they have and know about where you are. She called me on the job and said, hurry home. I said, what's wrong now?
My drunken brother had DTs again. He had them when they first come out. I mean, she said he was drunk and sick, and I had to get him in the hospital. And said, while you was gone, the oil man came and the oil tank's leaking. And I said, I'll be right home. And I went home. And when I hit the front doors about 11 o'clock in the daytime, I went in and laid down and went to bed. She come in the room and said, what are you doing? I said, I'm going to bed. I said, these people I've been talking to told me to take it easy, and I've had enough things to make me drunk half a dozen times. So this is the only way I know how to take it easy. I stayed in bed until supper time. I got up and I ate my supper and I went back to bed. I was afraid to go out. I was afraid I'd get drunk. And I come in here to stay sober. And as true as I'm standing here before you tonight, the next morning, every drunken painter I had showed up. The man fixed his own ceiling. The plaster was all right. The man found the bill that hadn't wrong bill, and he paid me. My brother was in the hospital doing good. And be damned if the washer didn't swell up on the oil tank, it quit leaking. I've been taking it easy ever since. There hasn't much happened financially since that, but I maintain I have learned how to live. And this is harder than making a living. When you're at peace with yourself and your fellow man, your God as you understand him, that's when you begin living. Don't wait for any utopia. It isn't next week or next month, it's today. I often tell them, while you're alive, live a life of clover, because when you're dead all over. I mean, enjoy it. Don't work hard for 11 months and take 30 days off. You can't live that way. I have learned how to live happily every day with what I have. I don't have everything I want. I have everything I need. My wife works sometimes. That helps. But I say this in real, sincere honesty. I say some things sometime up here that I afterwards think about them, and they do me good. That's what it's speaking for anyway. It don't help you a bit, it helped me. I was working, I had this little store one time that I was very successful with. I mean successful, I opened it and I ran it for 10 or 15 years and never made a dime. Well, when I say successful, the people three blocks from where I run the store took in thousands and thousands of dollars. It's a heck clothing store and all the things that go with the department store. Some of them poor people have to stay there at midnight to count the money. I could close at 4 o'clock and be in bed 2 minutes after 4. Well, now this is what they was working for. A lifetime of hard work so they could retire. Hell, I could retire any time of day I wanted to. But this is real. When I tell you I say things, I was fixing to go fishing one day. I closed the store at noon. My wife said, that's a fine way to run a store. I said, I'm running this one. It runs me. We'll close it. And we did. Well, I come by and I said, how about going fishing with me? He says, I can't go. I said, why can't you go? He says, I got to work. I said, why you got to work? He says, I'm broke. I said, how long have you been on this job? He said, 4 years. I said, hell, you could have gone fishing 4 years ago and just got back and been as well off as I know. And you know, you think that over, it's the truth. All of this hard work that you do to enjoy later on just might not do it. If you're sober and love your work, fine. I hear people say this. I think they lie about other things too, I mean. But be careful you don't lose the things that money can't buy by making money. There's a whole lot of this program that you can't buy. But when you learn to be at peace with yourself and your fellow man and your God as you understand him, that's when you begin to live. Now, I think a little prayer helps everybody get over anything. Of course, this is only my opinion. But I found that when I came to AA, I didn't go to church. I lived about three stills from the closest church in the mountain. I didn't get there. And when I got there, they was preaching wrong. Well, I mean, they're preaching on Sunday morning. If you're doing what they said if I did on Saturday night, you're going to hell anyway. It wasn't no use to go to church. If it held church on Saturday night, I might have gone. But a little honest prayer, and this is for real, you people that are new. This is for keeps. You're not kidding anybody in this deal. You can't pray like Uncle Jake. I mean, I had an old uncle that drank. Well, in fact, all my people drank. And one time he thought he was going to die, and he asked Aunt Jenny to come in and say a little prayer. I think she was a little hopped up, too. I don't know, but she dropped down on her knees and said, "Dear Lord, please forgive my poor drunken husband." He said, "Hell, don't tell him I'm drunk. Tell him I got the flu." That ain't going to do it. But a little honest prayer will do the job. I don't know how to tell you to do this. I don't know how to tell you about my higher power even. I have a feeling that when I try to help another alcoholic, whether I help him, whether I don't, I have a feeling between me and something that is not a human being. I have a kindred feeling of something, and this is my higher power. What yours may be, I don't know, or how you do it. So I'm not here to try to tell you how to get any spiritual lift from this program. If you didn't bring it in here with you, I can't tell you about it. But I'm as sure as there are people here, you brought a lot of it with you, and I see a lot of it in your faces out there. And I don't try to tell you like the old, an old boy up home, he went to church one morning and he may have been a little hungover, I don't know. Preacher preached a very fine sermon. When he got through, he said, "All of you want to go to heaven, stand up." And they all got up except this old boy and said, "Don't you want to go to heaven?" He said, "Yes, when I die," but said, "I thought you were getting up a load to go right now." So I don't go into this thing. This is not my business. I know how to stay sober, and that is not drink. Now this may sound a little stupid to you if you're new, but you try getting drunk without drinking. I don't know how to tell you to do this. It's up to you. This is kind of a do-it-yourself program with a little guidance. But you got to do something. You can't just expect to go to a meeting, not do anything. I tell a story a lot of times that explains it. I don't have the vocabulary to lay this out in long words so you can't understand it. So I tell it to you so you might remember it. In other words, there's a fellow went on a trip one time. He took his secretary with him. Many of you traveling men might understand this. Hope your wife don't. And we got to this hotel, and he only had one room. And he told his secretary, he said, "Look, you've been my secretary a long time. All right, if we just get one room?" She said, yeah, it's okay. So they got one room. They hung up some comforters or covers in between the beds. And went to bed, and she said, "I'm cold." And he got up and shut the window, got back in his own bed. She said, "I'm still cold." He said, "There's some cover over there on the chair." And she said, "Yes, I know there is, but I'm still cold." He said, "Well, let's play like we're married." She says, "All right, all right." He says, "Well, get up and get your own damn cover." So this is the way. It's the way you kind of got to work this program. Not somebody else can get up and get your cover for you. They'd like to. And I say, if you ask for help, you get it. This program has been the answer for most any problems I've had since coming to AA. I raised 2 children in this program. And I have now, as I told you, I think I have 9 grandchildren. I haven't counted them real late. That's when we left. I raised 2 kids in here, and I don't know a better way to raise children. Some of you new people may be trying to keep it from your children that you were belonging to AA. This too's all right if this is the way you want to do it. But my boy was about 5 years old, And we were sitting at the table one morning for breakfast, and my wife told me about a man who pulled up next door. He was drunk, and he stayed there until daylight. And my boy was listening to this conversation, and he says, "I think that fellow ought to go to AA." I said, "You don't know what AA is." He says, "Oh, yes, I do." I said, "Well, what is AA?" And I've never got a better explanation. He says, "It's a place for retired drunks." And say, I raised these kids in AA. Oh, incidentally, and one time this boy, talk about raising them in AA, this boy was about, got to be 17 or 18. He stayed out one night, and my wife kept me awake looking for him. You wouldn't think it by looking at me, but I can remember being 18 once. I knew about what he was doing, or he wouldn't have stayed that long. And about 3:30, he came in, and I got a little sleep after that. And the next morning when I woke up, she was out in the kitchen getting this boy's breakfast, mine too. And when I got out there, she was asking him a lot of questions. I was real proud of this boy. He was answering, wasn't telling her a damn thing. I mean, and when she got through, she said, "Aren't you going to say anything?" I said, "I'll straighten it all out. Just take it easy." And he looked at me kind of funny because this boy had listened to me. And I said, "Look, boy, if you had a decent girl out, you shouldn't have kept her that long. And she wasn't, it wasn't taking you that long. I mean, it's simple." Well, my wife hit the ceiling, but he got the message. Now, these are some of the things you're going to have to face if you have teenagers. You can hide it any way you want to, but this is true. I like to tell it like it is. I don't know if some of you older people is going to make it or not, but teenagers will make it. You don't have to worry about that. They've been doing this a long time, if you think over it. So it's not for me to say there's a better way than a simple, straight AA living for an alcoholic. How you do this is your business, and it isn't mine. I don't mean to try to tell you no more than the guy down there at Lauderdale. A lot of you people here from Florida, if I don't get to say hello to you, please say it to me. I don't know your names, half of you, but I'm just like the old drunk says. He ran into another drunk one time, and he said, "I don't know your name, but your breath smells familiar." A lot of these people from Florida look real familiar, and I don't know their names, but please don't pass me by. And I say, you've got to do this program and do the things that raise children and run your job and the whole thing. Like I started to tell you about the sand washed up on the beach down there, and they were pulling these cars out. It was quite a few years ago when that big tidal wave or something hit here, and there's one fellow going down the road dragging a chain from one car to another, and the fellow said, "What are you doing dragging that chain?" He said, "You ever try pushing one of these things?" And I remembered that for a long time. You got to do it the way you know how. How you run your program, how you do it, is your business. But again, I think learn how to take it easy is important. Don't overwork. Being overworked and tired, driving too long, a bunch of you alcoholics are here, that it's the one thing we all have in common, we either overdo or do nothing. You'll start home and your wife will raise hell to pull in a filling station. You probably won't make it until she hollers at you. You go as long as you can go, drive as long as you can, work as late as you can, and overdo or do nothing. This is one of the things we have wrong with. I have learned how to take it easy. This is a great thing. I tried. I worked hard for quite a few years after I come to AA. I wanted to be some kind of a big wheel. I didn't care what it was. I found out what little dogs did to big wheels, and I quit that. I mean, I saw that I wasn't going to amount to anything, so I tried being nothing, and I was success overnight. You have a place to sleep, something to eat, and a God of your understanding who is wealthy as you can get. I've seen a lot of people come in here and make a lot of money and get in a terrible bad shape over it. I'd like to try that sickness once, but it just didn't happen. So I had to take what I could get out of this thing. I work the program and enjoy living. A lot of people, I see a sad situation happen so often. I go to Florida every winter. I live up in the Shenandoah Valley from 6 to 8 months a year and spend the rest of the time down in Florida in the wintertime. You can't hardly beat that if you got money. I mean, a lot of people down there got so much money they can't come up to Virginia. A lot of them up in Virginia got so much they can't go to Florida. I can fill up the car with gas and go either direction. It don't make much difference. Now, this is learning how to live. Remember this if you're new. Learn how to live is a lot harder than making a living. I really believe this. No matter how much religion you've got or what all, nothing replaces the contentment and the pleasure in real living if you go to bed and think you've done the best you can do for that day. You have no excuses anymore for getting drunk again because I'm sober. If I can make it, you don't have any excuses. I was as sick and as bad off as any of you. I've been on the finest skid rows in the country. I'm not proud of it. I run into a fellow today who was from up around the Bay Area of California, and I told him I was real drunk out there one time, and I saw 4 streetcars coming down Market Street. And I found out later they really was there. I thought I was seeing things. I saw a lot of things that wasn't there. I've seen a lot of miracles since I came in here. And I think each and every one of us are a miracle. And this thing that God throws us into and to come in here, and by believing, I mean it's up to you to do it. I had a thing happen to me. Many little miracles that you can't count them all up, they're bound to be more than coincidental. There's a fellow here tonight from down in Florida that I know. And I played golf with him and another fellow one time, and I was telling him about what happened to me when I first went back to the country. See, I didn't retire. I just give up. I did. I said, this is it. I can't make it, so let's quit. Now, you arrive at the same place. I mean, if you want to wait till you're 75 and quit, okay, but I got there long before that. But when I went back home, they had AA meetings that wasn't exactly what I liked, which is quite normal. I come from a metropolitan area where there was 2 or 3 meetings a day, and back in my little hometown, they was having 1 a week, and it was run by a non-alcoholic treasurer and a drunken lawyer that was running it. All due respect to him, they wouldn't have had any. It hadn't been that, but he wouldn't last, and they was having speakers that wasn't members of AA or wasn't alcoholics, and they actually, I one night led a meeting, asked them how many read the book, and they wanted to know what book. But I went home one night, and this was upsetting my wife more than it was me. And I was trying to talk her smoother, and I said, it'll change. We've got 2 groups there now. And it did change. And I changed, too. But I got home one night, and I got to turn the radio on. I got a little transistor radio about that big in the middle of the night in the dark. One of them you turn on to get the weather report, and you get Bombay, India or something. And I turned it on. I heard a lady speaking, and I said, I know that woman. Now, this was back in the mountains with no light. And when she got through, it was Marty M., you know her, from New York. I turned it again, and it was this fellow that I played golf with, was Dell Scheibert. I don't mind using his name. He know I did. I heard him for 15 minutes, twice in the middle of the night, once maybe, twice possible. I turned it again, and I got a fellow named Phil Linhart that I had bought his last drink some years before in Washington, D.C. Once maybe, twice possible, 3 times in the middle of the night, I told Dell, wasn't this a coincidence? He said, this was no coincidence. You needed a meeting. And I did. And for the new man, the smartest thing I think I ever heard from this group was an old fellow back in the mountain that told me. He said, if you ever see me and I tell you I don't need a meeting, for God's sake, take me. That's how important I think it is going to meet. So get you a sponsor, go to meeting, and learn to believe in a higher power. I think you'll make it. I did. And if I did, there's no reason you can't. But you got to do a little something yourself. I say, we can't get out and get your cover for you. You've got to do it. It almost works like a story I tell to the new people. Philip Holmes was going in the service, and he had a horse he wanted to keep, and he asked the man how much he'd charge him to keep his horse, and he said, $50 a month, and I get the manure. He said, too much. He went down to another place, said, what do you keep my horse for? He said, $25 a month, and I get the manure. He said, still too much. He went on down, and he pulled into an old ramshackly place and said, what do you keep my horse for? He said, $10 a month. He said, who gets the manure? He said, $10 a month, there won't be any. So if you don't put something in this program, don't expect to get anything out of it. So do something. I don't care what it is. Don't drink and it'll work. For me, it has been the answer to my prayers, to my living, my way of life. And again, I say it's hard to learn how to live. Once you do it, it's easy. I think this is the greatest place in the world. In those 12 steps lies the answer to all the problems that will come along. And if you don't get it out of those 12 steps, ask any one of these 3,000 or so people here. They'll tell you how it works. I can't tell you. All I can tell you is that it works for me and I stay happy. And it's just been so good, I'd love to have all night to tell you, but I know some of you are wondering now when I'm going to stop, and this is about it. I appreciate you all staying all of this time, as warm as it is. And I appreciate the people asking me to come here. And I'd love to talk to any of you old friends that I have forgot your name. I'm a little weak in the head, as you know by now. If you think I'm a little wacky, leave me alone. I really enjoy it this way. It don't hurt. I don't have to comb my hair or to look pretty for you or anything. The program to me is still goes back and still is like my old story of the old man back in the mountain that bought him a fiddle with one string, and he played it all day long. Seesaw, seesaw. And his wife about to go crazy, and she says, I don't get it. Says, most people run the hand up and down the neck of that thing. He said, yeah, I know they do. They're looking for something. I've found what I want. Thank you.